My friend, Reverend Dr. Lori Bolster, she's got so many credentials and she is just a dear friend. She's highly intellectual, but I remember her most when she lived here for getting together with me to sing and to play cribbage and to drink Vietnamese coffee. Lori, it's just a wonderful friend and such a gift that she's willing to come here to share with us her wisdom and her appreciation for our community and for the Science of Mind philosophy. So it's my pleasure to welcome Dr. Lori Bolster.
Well, thank you, Connie. Yeah, it's a pleasure. And as usual, we'll see how this goes. A thread and where? Okay, so this talk is from the book, How to Change Your Life. Ultimately, it's about how do you choose to live? The chapter we're talking about today, interestingly enough, considering what's going on with the one member of this group, is about your thinking and your finances. Talking, saying that we're surrounded by a limitless mind energy out of which everything is made. We're familiar with the concept. And that what we do with our mind is how our lives can unfold. This book was published in 1982, but and I don't know if anybody's mentioned it before, but in the foreword, Reverend Dr. Michael Beckwith says that it was written in 1957. So why it was written in 57 and published 25 years later, I do not know, and nobody at home office can tell me. They don't know either. That's an interesting thing, that this book was written, in the mid 1950s, or perhaps earlier. And so it's towards the end of Ernest Holmes's life. So that means this is some of his highest understandings. And we all know that 100 years ago, he got started teaching people who were Christians and Jews about this different way of thinking, that we are living within this, within the divine. That we live within a creative force. We are of it. It creates out of its own self. And so, technically, literally, all the energy in the universe is available to us. Everything is available to us. It's what are we doing with our attention, with our minds? And so this is an interesting book because it starts out, this chapter starts out with what we all know, what you hold clearly, firmly in mind is and you see it already done, that you already it's already in existence in consciousness. And so now it just needs to unfold in life lived experience. It needs to just show up in a way that we're hoping it will in terms of well-being, health, a car, parking places, whatever it is that we really need in our lives or we really want. We want to be very clear in mind that we can feel it, we can smell it, we can taste it, and we know it is. And then it unfolds in a physical manifestation of our intentions, that our outcomes are a demonstration of our intentions. And so what's going on in our life right now is clearly what we intended. And if that's not what we intended, then we check in with ourselves about differences we want to make, changes we want to make. How to change your life. And so how do we want to live? And so I'm going to read a bit from this. Now, recently, the big thing that I am aware of in terms of a vision is that I think it's, is it Mary Grace Roman, the new telescope, the new space telescope. The first one was a Hubble, then came the James Webb, which I just love. I just rave about humans made that thing. And then they figured out how to fold it in a tube and shoot it out there. And then it all worked from the beginning. Awesome. Here comes the new one, the Roman telescope, which they're planning on shooting off later this year. Imagine the visioning. Let me tell you something. That Roman telescope is named after a woman who was NASA's astrologer, maybe the first astrologer. I'm not sure if she's first or just first woman. She was in 1960 to 62. Some of this visioning started a very long time ago. It's very cool. Anyway, so I'm going to read a little bit from this book, from the chapter. This is right at what some of us are dealing with right now. It would be well worth your while to devote some time in your regular routine to get yourself into a mental state of real belief in regard to this spiritual bank account of yours. Just as soon as you truly believe and feel with your whole being that your good is available, when you accept it and know it is yours, then it is yours. When you believe something good is yours, the universe has no choice but to respond to that. That it's not only a process of identification by which you only believe in your financial welfare, but you also act as though it is now yours. That we know, we appear and we feel and we act prosperous. That, first of all, you must consistently believe in it, in the existence of whatever it is that you're focusing on. When you actually expect it, then you're all well on your way to meeting it halfway, and that is the highest test of faith. That if at the start you successfully find the employment, new plans, or whatever else you may have specifically wanted, then be very sure you fill at least a portion of your time afterward by giving service, which will help others. Here we go. He starts out with hardcore, basically, treatment, visioning what I want, what I desire, and expect it, feel it, taste it. No, it's mine, and it's in consciousness, and now it has to occur in the physical reality as I want it to be. Here in this book, he's moving on to a way bigger picture. He's going cosmic. Be very sure you fill at least a portion of your time afterward by giving service which will help others. It is necessary that you express yourself in a worthy endeavor because life is action and you must be creative in some respect. You might, in fact, be greatly surprised to find that kind, generous, free service may be just the thing to set in motion the activities which will result in a job you need, increased business, or some other financial circumstance you desire. The same is true in regard to giving money. There are hundreds of great needs in the world today where every dollar you can spare will serve some worthy purpose. Don't give carelessly. But when you know of a truly fine work which is being carried on and which needs your support, you do yourself an injustice if you do not contribute to it. If you're going to be rich in concrete ways, you must first be rich in consciousness, have the feeling of abundance. Let common sense guide your expenditures at times, but get all the happiness and satisfaction you can out of every dollar. If your best judgment suggests a purchase, make the transaction one of mutual goodwill, be it great or small, and have a habit of silently blessing your money as you hand it over. You may desire to use money for some particular purpose, but wonder, is it right to do so? Am I selfish in using my money for this? Use this test. Will it be of value to me? And because of it, will I be of greater help, inspiration, encouragement, or practical help to others? If so, it is right. If through me a greater good can come to others, this money will be wisely spent. So he starts with the hardcore, what we all learn early on. How to create, how to co-create what it is we desire to have in our lives. And so we start by addressing a desire, something you want different, and then it quickly moves to how does this benefit the whole? So we're going from the ego, my own little self wants something, and then it moves to the greater good. Oops. I keep getting a request to allow or deny something. No. And so That it's really interesting. I ran across something about Maya Angelou recently. It was talking about that when she is writing the last chapter of her book, whatever she's working on, she moves herself into a hotel. And then she plays solitaire to occupy her small mind. Okay. So the big mind, the purposeful mind, one focused on what's the creation here? But then sometimes your mind needs to be occupied or entertained. I just thought that was great. And so knowing that, being aware of how we're functioning, what are we looking for in life, and how do we take care of all of our own self, including perhaps our small mind? And so, yes, if you have a desire and you're visioning and you're holding clearly in mind as already done, then you release it to the law. Well, remembering that Holmes was talking to people 100 years ago, people knew what a law was. But when you tell people back then that we are living within this creation, we are it. We're living, breathing it. That's a little tough. So I think that's why they use the word law, because people understood law. But we know that all it is creation. That's what we are. The divine lives and breathes within us. We live and breathe within this creative process. It's all there is. And so, do we get it? I've mentioned before, it's about where do we pray from, not about or to or with, but where are we praying from? The first step of treatment, it's all God. That's where we create from. And so, we can do that. We can hold it clearly in mind. So the choice that we have here is how do we want to live? It's do we want to live consciously or randomly? Do we want to be paying attention or not? Are we going to have ego run it? Ego, a healthy ego is a good thing. It really is. It can be a happy life. Or do we want to actually also be feeding and living from that ultimate truth that we are living? What kind of relationship are we living within with divinity, with this divine power, this creative force, God, with the beloved? How are we doing that? If it's all about me, that's a fabrication of the brain. Me, I is coming right out of our cognitive processor, who I am. And so safety and survival and food and shelter are critical. And so if that's where life is at the moment, then yes, that's the focus. How to create this life that I am living in right now. How to manifest the things that support my life. And whether or not I'm happy in my life is not necessarily a function of any of that. I can choose. Okay, I'm gonna be positive. I'm here. I've got whatever I've got. And be happy, I can do that. I can separate it out from my discomfort or my concerns. But if it's just all about me, then that's right here. If we can move into really thinking in terms of beyond survival stuff, if we can get into a deeper form of a pure awareness within that relationship with the Creator, that's a whole different way of living. And it's tricky right now because society. First of all, we got the survival issues, but now we've got a whole different layer, I mean, a big layer of things to be worried about things that are scary, about climate. People talking about climate, that's been going on for decades now, and now some are saying, well, we're already past the tipping point. We're already hearing about glaciers melting. We're already hearing about islands and cultures are going to disappear. We're already hearing about all this stuff. Along with a lot of other things, plastics, toxicity this, toxicity that. It's in the food, it's in the air, it's in the water. Yeah, there's a lot to be worried about. And so we end up with a society that now is kind of fear-based. And for a lot of people, it's real fear-based. I mean, somebody's coming to get you. Yeah, it's not just paranoia, they are after you. And so, how to live within this uncertainty, this misinformation, danger, inequalities that are becoming more extreme, environment is becoming more toxic. physical and psychological and emotional stressors are increasing. And so how do we deal with this? How do we live purposefully when the baseline now is just so full of concern? It's in the collective consciousness. How do we live? How do we interact in that situation? We have to start with our values, what matters to us. In online, you can look up and there's lists and lists of values. You can sort through and see, okay, which ones really resonate with me? What are our individual values? Things like connection, like here we are, compassion and kindness, wisdom, devotion. What are we devoted to and about? Ethics, integrity, patience, respect, fairness. And, it can be very different for each of us because we have our in different individual lives. If you have children, that's a whole different set of values that can come into play. If you're 20, your values may be different from if you're a few decades older than that. And so what are you, what's our values? What do I care about? What really matters? And then we get into issues of morality. Are we concerned about right now, right here, right now? Or are we concerned about the future, taking care of, 7 generations out? When it's just pure capitalism profit motive, make a bunch of money right now, don't care about that's later. So how do we deal with that when big rich companies are just about making more money? That's what happened with tobacco back in the day. They finally admitted, yeah, we knew that it was addictive. Now we know other things are. Now we know the thing we hold carry around in our pocket or our purse is addictive. Social media, they designed it that way. Now we have silos of beliefs and people addicted to that stuff. And it's they know how to manipulate people, children's brains. Well, here we have another big concern. The divine is within us, and things, massive changes can happen. I got a story that I really get a kick out of this. It's an example of how real focus, really divinely rooted focus, can make an extraordinary difference in a massive organization. I don't know if any of you are Catholic or ever heard of this. In 2012, 3 leaders of the Catholic Church's Leadership Conference of Women Religious, those are nuns, the 3 top women over tens of thousands of nuns, went to the Vatican for an annual meeting. There, when they arrived, they learned that the Vatican had formally reprimanded them, saying that they were radical, they had a radical feminist agenda, and they were out of alignment with the church doctrine. And they had sent this announcement out already to bishops all over the world. These women were just floored, stunned, humiliated, shocked, blown away. Stayed for a couple of days of meetings and then went back home. Now, how they dealt with it, it's massive humiliation and boom. How they dealt with it is the story. They did not get all angry. They did not go out in public and fight back. Nuns are contemplative. They pray off and on all day. They live a prayerful life. They also work with the poor and the marginalized, rather than the bishops, who have a whole different perspective of the world and humans. And so they have a lived experience with people, including things like contraception and the differences in how people function and are. They live from prayer. All actions and decisions come from prayer. And so back in the US, they use their normal approach to decision making. Everything starts with prayer. It's a discernment process. They call it muddling through. They don't end on a big hurry. Not a lot of anger and yelling and carrying on, just a discernment process. God's will, not ours. It's not about anger. It's not about public arguing. They made 0 comments to the media. They kept it in-house. It's our business, and they came from silence in their discernment process. They just wanted to get through it, respecting the integrity of the church. 3 years later, a resolution was announced. It turns out that this process actually shifted the paternalistic position of the church, recognizing that that meant literally paternalism as father rules. And that didn't work for all the women in the church, whether or not they were nuns. The church actually changed its position on some things. It's a massive, thousands of year old organization. And this discernment, prayerfully based, worked through quiet, calm, clear, contemplative discernment process, shifted the church. And everything changed. Well, not everything, but a lot of things changed. Prayer is recognition of communication within oneself. Meditation is a prayer from the heart. It's not about my prayer. It's meditative, prayerful expression, connection. And so we know this is creative, and we know that we can live and breathe within this creation and this prayerful, discerning, clarity, calm, honest, respectful process can make big changes. And that, I think, is where Holmes was going with how he expressed the last couple of pages in this book. That we serve others. If our decisions, if what we do, if our prayers and our actions serve others, the greater good, can start with us because we recognize things with our own self and with other people and family and friends. Oh, I'm going to pray about, but it's not just pray about them, their situation. It's that one and then everybody else in that situation. It gets bigger. It's about all. And so it's not just about ego, our own little self, within small mind right now. It's from creation and for benefit of all.